It is Saturday, September 2nd, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, we're taking your calls and we're doing some geek news.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our show, we're taking calls from you, the listener, and emails, of course, at geekspeak.org. And, of course, we're also doing some geek news to start it out. It's all hour of geeking out. During the second half of the show, and probably maybe first half of the show to some degree, we'll take your calls with questions and comments to technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us right now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about 15-20 minutes. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Geek Sean Cleveland. Sean Cleveland is a technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. And this week, actually, I visited you at work, Sean. First time I've actually seen your place of business. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was kind of nice to have you come out and visit for the lunch anyway.
You know, I don't mean to be insulting at all by this, and maybe it sounds that way.
Oh, well, then don't say it.
Well, I'll say it anyway. Because we kind of attack Disney to some degree. The campus felt kind of like a Disney in its business campus, not Disneyland, but actually the feeling.
Yeah, we all walk around.
What are those stuffed animals?
Yeah,
but it's very cool. I mean, the creative department, of course, was neat tour in, see all the work that NVIDIA is doing, all the employees.
Yeah, they put a lot of stuff up on the wall, so it's kind of fun to see.
It is funny.
All the new posters and things they're working on.
I remember years ago we did a LAN party and playing some fighting war game. I don't remember what it was. And NVIDIA actually sponsored us and gave us some stuff. I'm assuming it's from the marketing department. So I've got a shirt and seeing the logo, of course, in its raw form in that environment was kind of neat to see all the creative people that did that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Your department, which is all the you work on all the motherboard chipset stuff. So NVIDIA is known as a graphics company, but it also is a chipset company. And getting a tour of like kind of how that process works, in that you have to test all the boards, and then you're sending all these boards to the developers that actually make boards, like ASUS, which is one of the major companies.
We're sending reference boards just so they can start. So everybody, system builders and salespeople, anyone that has anything to do with a computer, what needs these boards to plug their cards into, memory manufacturers, for testing and validation. So
it's amazing.
Yeah, you saw the boards in my cubicle. There's just stacks of them.
You look like you're drowning in it. You know, what struck me as amazing is, there's like three or four chipset manufacturers. There's Intel, there's NVIDIA, and there's some others. And there are these
ATI. And a bunch of Taiwanese via SIS.
And these are all people that make chips that support the computer itself. And it's kind of like the fundamental, the foundation of the computer.
Yeah.
But there's only a few of these companies, five. Six, like that. And really three major players.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And then I was like, well, how many chipsets are there? And so we started trying to do the numbers. You're like, oh, there's a few boards. And then the amount of motherboards that come out is astronomical based on that small set.
Yeah.
We're talking, I don't know, hundreds every month.
As soon as a board is released and I'm sending it off to press and I'm starting to track what they're doing, I'm already on another
Yeah, project. The product. Right.
Yeah. So and I'm then that board goes multiple projects at different
right.
You know, phases of the project.
And then you're describing to me that your reference board has a pretty NVIDIA's like chipset reference board has a pretty good support for a whole bunch of different features. It's kind of like, here's an example board that you can make.
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
These big companies take your chipset,
yeah,
take your ideas.
Yeah, these motherboard manufacturers could just take our board and our plans and just build a board. And
they wouldn't have to do anything.
They don't have to do anything.
But instead, they stick all these engineers and rebuild a machine with other features.
Yeah, they redesigned the board completely to make it their own, to make it, you know, differentiated in the market. Some of these companies like Asus and MSI and Gigabyte, they target the enthusiast, so they put, you know, enthusiast level items, you know,
support.
Things on the board, like
RAID 5.
Instead of on our chip, instead of putting a heat sink and maybe a fan, they'll put a big heat pipe that's this big copper, you know, pipe, and it just snakes across the board. What's nice about that is it makes it very quiet.
Sure.
You know, and heat is spread out amongst the chips, so you don't have to worry about cooling with a fan, because nobody really wants a fan if they can help it, especially those building media center PCs. So there's a lot of this thought going into the board design process as to what's the best airflow across, you know, the various memory,
yeah, the
CPU,
that you don't spec
all of the chips on the board. What do we offer? What do you offer the high end? What do you offer the middle, the mid range person? And then what do you take off for the low end? It's kind of how it comes together, you know, and it's pretty amazing how it all works. And it's just such, on a large scale of economy that, you know, there's so many boards made that when it comes down to it, it's, you know, the prices are lower.
See, that's the thing, everywhere. That's the thing that struck me is there's all this engineering effort to go in, and we're seeing, you know, every 2 months that board is gone. You know, there's
new boards coming out faster. Everyone talks about the CPU comes, you know, that's refreshed every, you know, 8 months to a year. The GPU is refreshed every 6 months
or so. That's the graphics card, huh? And what about the motherboard? The motherboard's,
you know, I'd say the motherboard chipset is probably refreshed every 6 months.
But
that's just for one, maybe for the enthusiast.
Sure.
You're going to see two enthusiast level chipsets a year. But then you've got the various other chipsets, the integrated chipset, you know, what's integrated graphics. You got the workstation boards, you've got the business boards.
There's a lot.
So you're
going
talking
on.
About a bunch of different products.
Yeah. All right, let's go on and then welcome Miles Elam to GeekSpeak. Miles Elam is the technical trainer at Surf Control. Miles, welcome.
Good morning.
And where are you, Miles?
I am in Southern California, in Torrance.
Are you your parents' place?
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for being on AIM this morning. What happened pretty quickly is everybody's gone. Dee's off and moving to Idaho. Drew's in Idaho. John's in Texas. Yeah, you're off playing with Alex. You know,
wait
for
a minute.
Birthday.
August
How
is over.
We have lives.
August is over. Vacations. You're supposed to be back at work,
yeah, that's right?
Get back to work. I guess Europeans come back and the Americans are like, you know what? I just worked hard the past month because all the Europeans are gone. September is American holiday.
Well,
starts with Labor Day.
Did you get a vacation in August? Oh, man.
You didn't get a vacation?
I swear I worked so hard in August because all these Europeans are gone. And I'm like,
I was
what?
Off, I was on vacation the entire month of August. It was wonderful.
Oh, God.
So, Miles, I would like to start with you on Geek News. You got something for us this morning?
Yes, I do.
Well, do tell.
There's a project started by an MIT affiliate called the One Laptop Per Child program. The idea being to make a $100 laptop for all the children in the world, something that would be a very small cost, but still a usable laptop, something that all children could use and in effect, or in an effort to level the playing field as far as technology and knowledge and information sharing.
Sure, we've talked about it before on GeekSpeak, sure.
Right. Well, it has a new name and it has a new price. It's no longer $100, it's now going to be $140 because of technical issues.
They just couldn't reach that $100, huh?
Well, they're thinking that it's going to be $100 over time as they get more economy of scale and as prices go down for components. And it's now being called the Children's Machine 1. But I do have a few more on it. It's a 400 megahertz AMD processor, 512 megs of flash storage, an SD card slot, microphone and headphone jacks, built-in camera, built-in wireless, and an 8-inch LCD screen that displays 1280 by 900 resolution.
Wow, that's nice.
Wow. Boy, that sounds like a little cost that they didn't need.
Yeah, what about that LCD? That seems like a little pricey for the resolution.
Well, 1280.
They've done some really cool things with this. One is that the laptop is a mesh network.
Oh.
So that if you are sitting with a bunch of people with the similar laptop, it sets up a mesh network from there. And then if any of them have a network interface, a connection to the internet, it will route through all of them, everyone out through that person automatically.
That's smart. Now, you said the storage space looks like flash RAM. It's 512 megs?
Mm-hmm.
No hard drive?
No hard drive.
That's all your storage?
That would be, one, too much power, and it would also be too error-prone.
So
thing is it has to be very durable.
The power issue, what are they running on?
What they're going to be, they do have a battery in there. But it's going to be from a wide variety of power sources. They've made the power supply such that you can plug it into most energy sources.
It's
haphazard. They were going to do a hand crank, but it turns out they were worried about durability issues with that.
Sure.
Having a kid, crank on a crank, it's going to... they also have been lowering the amount of power that this machine needs by doing things like the mesh network.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't require that the CPU be running.
Nice.
The CPU can be in sleep mode, and the network and the mesh network and packet forwarding still works.
So this is the $100 computer. It's now $140, but it's called the Child Computer 1, which, of course, assumes that they'll be coming out with a later version as well.
Child Machine 1. Yeah,
Child
it's going to be, candy-colored, and it's going to be very distinctive as a child's computer rather than an adult computer.
I remember seeing this last week, a news story that said, low-cost computer equals, millions, billions maybe of dollars to these countries. So even though the technology is really cheap, when you look at it and the volume that's required,
right,
the countries can't buy into it.
The basic idea is that a company that's emerging market, will buy one of these computers for every single child. And
right,
then,
actually, there have been a few countries that have ordered.
Who decided to do it?
Already. Unfortunately, I don't have the list right now.
I remember that a couple companies dropped out that they were expecting, and it was kind of an issue.
You mean countries?
A couple countries decided not to do it because it didn't make sense. But it's one of those things where it's a pretty major investment for a country. But then again, you're making all your children computer literate, and that's pretty amazing.
Well, India rejected the one laptop per child program, but I believe it was I'm trying to think. Singapore was one of them, or I've actually forgotten the ones. This was a news story from
2 weeks ago,
a couple months back.
Yeah,
but
the thing
also
is,
another cool tech about this piece of tech is that the 8-inch LCD can display even if the CPU is not running.
Oh, so you can read with it.
Yeah, so if they're just sitting there reading a page, they don't have to be sucking up power.
Nice.
Well, there are all these advances they've been making with this laptop to enhance the longevity that I actually was reading about thinking, wow, why isn't this in my laptop?
Because energy is so cheap. Okay, so this is Child Machine 1. Right now, it's kind of in the early stages where they need to have large investment companies buy millions of units, and then it's going to jumpstart into a situation where these things will probably be available and, I would assume, saturating markets at some point.
Right, and their target market are governments, nations. But
sure.
Yeah.
But, you can assume that these things will be being sold on eBay when they're released. I mean, that just is the way it's going to be. And I'm sure they'll be more expensive. But
although I have heard that individuals, if you want to support the project but also want to get in, any one of us could buy one or get together with a company and buy a bunch for a larger price.
Right.
Or for a higher price. And that would help, help that economy scale, would help subsidize.
I'd love to take a look at one and really figure out if this makes sense.
I'm honestly curious about them as well.
I remember, about 3 years ago, I was on a plane, and a person next to me pulled out an old piece of tech, and it was just a keyboard and a small LCD, like a two-row LCD, just text. And I was like, wow, that's kind of old. What are you using that for? It's kind of like a speak and spell kind of thing. And the woman told me that she wrote a lot. She was a journalist, and I wish I remember more information about it. And this is the most reliable thing she had because it ran on AA batteries, and it always saved all the data, and it was just text. And it's like, there's something about this kind of this laptop that's a $1,000 computer, and you drop it, and it's over. I like the idea of a durable, small cheap device. So it's kind of interesting, even not just for its goal of having every child on Earth having a computer, which of course is cool too. Okay, let's go to the next news story. Sean Cleland.
So NASA announced Orion this past week.
They named it.
So Orion is the officially announced name of the new U.S. moon vehicle that hopefully will be headed back to the moon again.
And we're talking about traveling humans to the moon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's very much like the last vehicle. It's 16. This one is 16.5 feet in diameter and has a mass of 25 tons.
Do you remember what the Apollo?
So yeah, it's about 2.5 the internal volume of the Apollo capsules.
So twice as big, a little bit more than
yeah.
twice as big.
Yeah, and the goal is to send four astronauts to the moon no later than 2020. And they're
okay.
They're hoping to have its first flight before 2014. But yeah, about 51 years. Since the last time we went.
We're going back.
Going back to the moon.
Guys, you know that story about the high-quality footage of the first moon landing for Apollo missions just still gets me. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Remember this story? Where they have this great resolution photos of Armstrong stepping on the moon. You know, it's all this great footage. And the footage we always see is actually video capture of a TV monitor, kind of, that had this high resolution on it.
Yeah.
And now they've lost the tapes. And, of course, the whole conspiracy theory, which is just totally fun. I love tech conspiracy theories. I'm hoping that we'll have high definition. Maybe the DVD standard for high definition will be out by then. We'll actually be able to buy this stuff at home.
And then our grandchildren will look at it and say, oh, that's horrible.
I think high definition DVDs could be on the market by 2020, don't you think?
You don't hold your breath. Boy, so, they've been taking a pounding lately. It seems like nobody really cares.
Yeah,
so
I get that too.
The formats are beating each other up, and you know, Sony finally came out with the Blu-ray drive. Nobody wants to pay $1,000 for a drive. DVD quality is actually quite nice on a HD screen.
Sure.
And for 100.
Yeah, Sean, I've been hearing reports that folks have been seeing the Blu-ray DVDs or high-definition DVDs and just haven't been able to see the big difference.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I guess a title that shipped with Blu-ray drive wasn't given DVD quality on purpose for some reason. I wanted to get the whole story on that. But, you know, but when I talk to people at NVIDIA, I haven't sat down yet because, it takes quite a bit of hardware to get it to work. Not only do you need an HD DVD player or Blu-ray inside of a computer, because consumer devices aren't available yet, and the movies are quite inexpensive. They're, you know, maybe $5, $10 more than a regular DVD. And they come in snappy little blue and gray boxes. I guess that's the coolest thing I've seen.
The packaging?
But you also need a new monitor that supports high-definition content protection, which is HDCP. Dell's 24-inch flat panel does. I can't think of any more off the top of my head.
Are you saying that you can't unencode? The monitor itself has to have the unencode chips because
yes,
it's all
the monitor itself has to have the hardware that that the DVD player will allow to play the content.
So
you can't just get
it.
This player and expect to play it on your monitor. You got to have a DVI connection. It's got to have the chip in the monitor to allow the whole hardware, you know, handshaking to happen between
just to support,
the devices.
Just to support copyright, you know?
And it's got a lot of potential. I mean, you're talking about a much higher resolution image.
But
how many people
watch... But a lot of
work
and a lot of effort.
Watch, you know, movies on their computer. It's going to happen. Just make sure when you go to buy your high-definition TV, plasma screen, LCD, if you really want to get involved in the next generation of high-definition, you need to get HDCP.
HDCP.
High definition copy protection. Ugh. It's got to support that.
I don't want to buy that. I just don't want to support that whole paradigm where
yes, the other thing
stuff
it's
in my house
just
is locked
feel,
down by corporations
yeah.
or somewhere else. Just don't like it. Makes me sick.
But you know, if you get a Sony PlayStation 3, a lot of people are expecting to get a Blu-ray drive with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it will come with
sure.
that. And even if the thing is $500, I mean, that's a really cheap Blu-ray,
sure.
you know. So
sure. Well, we'll see if
just make sure you got the screen to support it.
Miles, do you have more news, sir?
Yes, I do.
What do you got? Well, let me first say one thing. That you're going down south right now to go visit Alex Lias, whose birthday is today. And Alex is joining us on Yim, but it's not on the phone. And Alex just said that actually the moon landing, they didn't lose the footage at all. They're just making a lot of hype to sell the DVDs. See, it's very smart.
Ah.
No, actually, they found some moon landing footage.
Good.
There was an individual who checked out the footage from the Library of Congress back in the 70s.
And kept it?
And, yeah, he had it in his personal collection, then heard all the hype about people saying, oh, we've lost all the moon landing footage, and was able to call them up and say, no, actually, I've got it here.
Nice.
See, if they really want to stir controversy, they should bundle the alien autopsy with the moon footage. It'd be awesome.
Sean, get into a new story while Miles is looking.
So Intel released their Core 2 Duo processor for notebooks.
Oh, for
this
notebooks.
Past week.
Like, they released that a while ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, for notebooks.
So it is the Intel C2D, which is Core 2 Duo. T7600 runs at 2.33 gigahertz. And there are various speeds in between. And the bottom chip, the lower level chip, is the T5500, which runs at 1.66 gigahertz. So Core 2 running at 2.3 gigahertz in a notebook. Wow, awesome. The only thing is it comes with 4 megs cache, which is great. It's got a lot of performance. The FSB, the front side bus, is only running at 667 megahertz, which means the memory will only run at 667 megahertz.
Yeah, but for a laptop, maybe that's not that big a deal.
Yeah, if you really want to go for 800, which is where the sweet spot of DDR2 is. Actually, there's not a lot of chips except for the enthusiasts, the really high-end, that support DDR2 at 800 anyway.
Okay.
Those will be out next year. Those are codenamed Santa Rosa.
All right. So do you predict that Apple's next announcement is Core 2 Duo processors in their laptops?
I don't know. Do I care?
Ask
I don't
you care. Hey, speaking of laptops.
So, you know, I would think so. If I were to put money down this year, probably. But you know, if you're going to buy a notebook, well, this might be something to wait for.
We're always saying that. We say that every 2 months. You got to wait for this new cool thing before you buy your thing. All right, let's go to the next news story from Miles. You ready now?
Yes, I am.
You go for it, man.
Turns out there's a single-celled species, so a single-celled organism, that has a genome as complex as ours. Now, normally you have
a single-celled organism?
That's yeah. Cool.
What is it
normally,
doing?
They're going to be much simpler than we are. However, there is one in particular, Tetrahymena thermophila, and I'm sure I said that wrong, that whereas we have a, you know, this complexity to be very specific, you know, to say, you know, we're able to do certain things and have this complexity to, you know, fit into our environment, but a very rigid, you know, ability to survive and procreate.
Wow, it could be a whole new species. If we could advance evolution by billions of years, we could create maybe a new species, huh?
Sorry, let me rephrase that. Whereas humans use their genomic complexity to be, in part, to create a stable environment for the body, this species uses a genomic Swiss Army knife to make whatever environment it encounters work for it. In other words, new ways of being able to metabolize items as they come in. It's kind of like a single-celled chameleon.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So it's still single-cell, but its complete makeup is so that it can survive in an acid environment versus a cold environment and so on.
Well, when a new nutrient shows up in the neighborhood of the species, it can sort of build a biogenetic kit to suck the nutrient in, degrade it, and turn it into cellular biomass.
That seems like a really specialized single-cell organism.
Well, no, it's not specialized. That's the thing. It's generalized.
It's complex. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay.
But the single cell has some 27,000 genes.
Okay, so what day of creation did God make that one? Sorry. Okay.
And how can we use science to make it better?
Yeah. Lyle, 4 months in flame day.
What was that, Miles?
Sorry, I'm using a geek term. You're just trying to cause trouble.
Okay, all I hear
was stirring the pot.
Yeah, that's true. Well, speaking of causing trouble, I asked for it. I said I like conspiracy technology, conspiracy theories, and so now from Santa Cruz, Bob, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question, Bob, or comment?
Well, hi.
Hiya.
This is Lyle.
This is Lyle.
Lyle, hi. Yeah, of course, conspiracies seem to be part of the human condition. There are those that think 9/11 was a conspiracy.
Yes, I've seen the documentary, the rockumentary. Yes.
Yeah, the whatever you want to call it. And Roswell and the moon landing has even been advocated as a conspiracy. But now the Kennedy assassination intrigues me that it may well be something more than just Lee Harvey Oswald without a lawyer.
Sure. Okay, but what does this have to do with technology?
Well, we have now done acoustics analysis, ballistics analysis.
What's acoustics?
Acoustics.
Acoustics, uh-huh.
Acoustics,
oh, yeah, yeah.
From one of the police motorcycles that was right there.
Uh-huh.
All right, so I just wanted to get what you thought regarding the Kennedy assassination and conspiracy. And
well, I haven't investigated it very much at all. I saw the movie. That was fun. I think the trick with this is that because of the lack of good recordings, you know, we've got basically one footage, which has no sound, and then we've got, I guess, that one sound source. Having a one-point dissection of a scene leaves for a lot of assumptions. And as soon as you have a lot of assumptions, you don't have a lot of good data. So I would say that unless... I think the best thing that's going to happen if indeed there's a lot more going on than what happened is that someone's going to talk about it in memoirs or with somebody else, and we're going to have more information about it because we're talking about people that are still alive that were involved.
Unless the conspiracy took care of that.
Unless it all took care of that, and we'll never know.
Kind of like Günter Grass coming out right before he gets ready to.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible we'll see something like that.
Yeah,
but then again, it's going to be
able
to continue mystery.
Yeah.
I don't think the technology is going to solve that problem very well. I mean, there is complete 3D models of the entire area. There's a lot of data looking at that space.
And there's a lot of crackpot conspiratorial.
There is.
Too.
And, you know, that's one of the difficult things about any time when there's a lot of emotion around it. How do you get through that fluff and actually get interested? How do you get people that aren't emotionally involved so they can be good scientists doing that work? There's too much load of emotion. So maybe the other thing we need is, you know, 50 years and look at it again when there's a lot less emotion.
And it's not the scientists who are pushing the conspiracy, and it's the people who like the idea of a conspiracy.
Were traumatized by the loss of Kennedy.
I don't want to spin your show too far up, but I think there is a reasonable doubt that the Warren Commission is wrong.
Yeah, well,
there are so many things that happened during the process, including, of course, Oswald getting shot, asking for a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's just so many things that say, well, maybe this is not completely settled. But as to how to settle it, and you're correct, that the what I've seen about the... And the acoustic stuff didn't come out until, I think, the 70s or 80s.
Sure.
So this is kind of an ongoing trial.
I think we're going to go on with Geek Speak at this point, but thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Thanks much.
Bye-bye.
So this past week, Firefox released Beta 2. I wanted to bring that up.
Okay, let's bring that up in just a second. I want to say that GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. I just handed that to you and didn't even tell you what to read. You see that second block?
Yes.
Why don't you go for that?
GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure.
No, I just read that one.
I'm sorry, I was reading this.
To me? What's that?
We are professionals.
That one.
Here we go.
That one.
Oh, my God. I was reading the other one. KUSP sponsors Sing Along with the Sound of Music, a benefit for advocacy incorporated people throughout Santa Cruz and the Monterey Bay area, have a unique opportunity to address... Boy, I didn't say that right.
That's because I just handed it to you.
KUSP co-sponsors Sing Along with the Sound of Music, a benefit for Advocacy Incorporated. People throughout Santa Cruz and the Monterey Bay area have a unique opportunity to dress as their favorite character and sing along with Julie Andrews and Rodgers and Hammerstein's Sound of Music. This event will take place on Saturday, September 9th at 7 p.m. at the Rio Theater in Santa Cruz. For more information, please call 429-1913 or go to online riotheater.com.
You know, see, Miles, what happens when you leave town? Just can't do that.
All coherency out the window.
We don't know how to do anything. To top it all off, Sean and I stay up late gaming last night. So
we're
totally tired. Oh, we're like, what are we going to do for the show tomorrow? We'll figure it out. And we get here, we run into each other on the road.
I open my bag up and I realize, oh, my laptop's underneath the couch.
So we had to go.
I put it there to get it out of my daughter's way.
So while Don is doing your show, Dr. Don was on before us. And by the way, if you tune in to Just Geek Speak, Dr. Don's a better show. So anyway, Dr. Don's on right before us. And we're like setting up a computer in here, you know. 5 minutes, whatever. Okay, I gotta get on with this though. Please call in. We need your help. Call in right now with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go use the internet if you like. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us, and we'll take questions of technology, anything you'd like to ask us, but let's let go of the conspiracy theories, unless it's like something... No, let's just let go of that. But the phone numbers, again, for technology questions, comments... 476-2800, 800-476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak is supported by business... I'm sorry. Let's read that one again.
Oh, my God.
GeekSpeak is supported by Cruise.io Internet, offering DSL broadband, computer rentals, and tune-ups. Cruise.io has rental retail stores in downtown Santa Cruz and Watsonville. More information can be found online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geek in the air room this morning is Sean Cleveland on the phone from Los Angeles. Area is Miles Elam. And our phone answerer is Rick Philman, waiting for your calls with questions and comments at technology, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-KUSP. Where were we in our conversation? We were talking about conspiracy theories? No. Let's go ahead
and talking about how unprepared we were for the show.
That's right. That's good. Thanks for remembering
that. You guys are on me being in the air room.
Yeah, that's right.
Miles is our rock.
From Pacific Grove, Gene, what's your question?
Good morning, geeks.
Good morning, Gene. What's up?
Okay, you're gonna have to explain something that I don't get.
We'll do our best.
Okay. I have a telephone. I still have dial-up connections. But if you watch TV now, there's something called Vonage, and then even Comcast saying, we will provide you your telephone coverage. How can they do that? Is it, then they call it digital, so I guess it wouldn't be analog, but, I mean, would it be a landline? Would I have a phone?
This is the technology you've been hearing about called VoIP, or voice over IP. So what's going on is there are some services out there that will allow you to send out data through your internet connection to, you know, someone else on the internet. For example, if someone else has voice over IP, sending it, you know, from your house to their house through your internet connection. Or in the case of like Skype out, things like that, you're able to use your internet connection to send data to a central server, which then dials a phone number.
So to answer your question, instead of a phone line connected to your house, you have an internet connection to your house. And with that internet connection, you pipe your telephone on top of that. And this company, you know, Vonage, or any of these companies that provide this.
Yeah, Vonage. They're really putting a lot of money in hardware and services.
A lot of money. But you have to have an internet connection for this to work. And more than half of the high-speed internet connection, you have to have a high-speed internet connection. You can't just have a dial-up internet connection. You have to have broadband. The broadband choices basically for the United States are cable or DSL. And DSL, you have to have a phone line in your house for DSL. So it's only cable companies, basically, maybe satellite companies or maybe Wi-Fi companies, people that are getting broad area Wi-Fi, whatever that's called. But the cable company choice is really the one. So what they'll do is they'll say, okay, you get cable, and therefore you're going to have to buy cable television, which is going to cost, and then you get your broadband on that, and then you get your voice over IP through your cable. Now, anyone that actually knows they have cable understands that cable service is much more unreliable than phone service, at least in the Central Coast area that I'm familiar with, of California. So it really comes down to, do you want your phone, your main line of communication, to be through cable?
Yeah, if you lose your power, you still don't. Your phone's not going to work.
It still works if you lose power.
But the benefits of these companies is that they'll pretty much give you free nationwide calling. Free. Because it doesn't really cost them very much.
The only concern that a lot of people have is they don't have access to emergency numbers if the power goes out.
Right.
But Vonage and all these companies have figured out a way to get around that as well.
How do they do that? Big power supply?
Miles, you know how that works?
It's called go visit the fire department when you got a problem. Hey, Miles, you still with us? You seem quiet and far away.
I'm sorry. Yes, I am.
Okay. Do you know how this whole thing works when you lose your power and your internet connection goes down and you've got no phone, right?
Then you have no phone.
Yeah. I don't think they've solved it, really. I think that...
Right. The reason why you still have a phone line when the power goes out is because it's on a completely separate power grid. Yeah.
Now, theoretically, you could have DSL from your phone company for broadband and then not get a phone number through them. But I don't think they're going to let you do that. So
theoretically, you could. In practice, I've tried, in my area, they don't allow it.
The truth of the matter is, you get a cell phone, and if your cell phone works at your house, you don't need a landline phone.
Yeah, I'm not going that way. Yeah.
Well, so basically, with dial-up, our answer is it's not going to work for you.
Oh, well, I didn't think what I just was trying to understand it, but you yeah. still have a phone in your hand connected, say, to a cable.
Yeah, actually, what they do is they make a little box that does all the work for you. You connect this into your router, your computer network,
uh-huh.
and then it acts like a complete phone. The cool thing with this, too, is that most of them allow you to take that phone with you. You take that physical huh. phone to your office, the same phone number works on that phone. The phone is like...
Oh, yeah, anywhere in the world. Number. And you can have your phone, yeah, you can find your phone number anywhere, and you can use your phone anywhere, as long as there's
And that is really cool.
But you know what? It's kind of not true because you've got to have a router that supports quality of service.
That's true. You've got to have open
ports. Or you will have a lot of
problems.
I understand it better. It ain't for me.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Deke.
That's all we try to do is make it understandable a little bit better. Hopefully we produce more questions than answers. Got to keep people thinking.
Hopefully we provide more answers than
questions.
I like
the idea of producing questions. I think that's a great source.
Okay,
and speaking of questions, we got from Santa Cruz, Don, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
What's going on with your Macintosh?
It's the classic question that always gets me two answers. I'm hoping you can give me one answer.
Oh, we'll give you five answers.
It's this. Is it really safe or not to leave your Macintosh on sleep?
Are you safe in what way?
In the sense that I've just had my Macintosh go down, and I almost always have it on sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard the two answers are usually, yeah, but.
Is it a desktop machine?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It's a G5 Tower.
Okay. So sleep mode basically is kind of halting all the processing of the computer.
Yeah.
And it makes it so that you use a lot less energy, and it just sits there and doesn't do anything. But it's still booted, so that when you take Kevin out of sleep, it's very fast. It wakes up right away,
yeah.
which is cool. In a laptop, you have a backup battery source all the time. So a power problem will not cause your machine to go down without being shut down. If you leave your desktop computer on sleep mode all the time, anytime you lose power, you're basically turning your computer off without shutting down. So it's not good for your computer. But with that said, in sleep mode, your hard drive's not functioning, so it's relatively safe to turn it off. I would say that, yeah, you're completely safe to be in sleep mode.
Okay.
I do it all the time with my laptop, and I think it's great.
Yeah, the reason, of course, I want it is because then I can remember, I can be reminded of what I had been doing
sure.
before.
Oh, no, it's great.
Because it's up on the screen.
Yeah.
In other words, you say that that's not why my Macintosh crashed.
No, your Macintosh crashed because technology's complicated.
Okay.
But what I would say you want to do is reboot your computer every once in a while. So when you know you can leave it, you know, don't let it go for more than like a week without actually shutting down.
You gave me the answer.
That's the answer.
Yeah. By the way, what would I do without you? But on the other hand, what would you do without us?
I know.
Yeah.
We'd just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that, right? Okay, thank you so much for the call.
Thanks a lot.
You'd be gone.
Well, the answer was pretty clear this morning when Sean and I got here. You didn't have your laptop, and we're like, what are we doing? And the only reason we were saved is because of Miles. And, of course, because we can say, let's take calls, because they have questions, and sometimes we know the answers to them. All right, Kel, Melinda, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
Hi. When I get a phone call, my wireless connection is lost on my computer.
What kind of phone do you have?
I have, one of those ones you carry around without a cord, of course.
Yeah.
Perfect. Hey, somebody actually ran into the problem. Does anyone remember the megahertz that actually interferes with Wi-Fi?
It's 2.4 gigahertz.
So on your phone.
For Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
B.
So on
NG.
your phone, what does it say how many megahertz your phone is?
It's
Hold on, let me look, okay?
I bet it's 2.4 gigahertz.
You want to bet? Oh, but should we bet lunch?
It says 2.4 gigahertz.
Oh, I have to pay for lunch for Sean.
Excellent.
Yes,
I'm eating large today.
Yeah, so that's the problem, is they're using the same frequency. It's one of those things, the reason why the companies are using that frequency is it's what's called an unregulated band.
Uh-huh.
So there's only a certain amount of segments of unregulated. The FM spectrum is designated pretty clearly by governments what you can use, what you can't. Certain frequency, like, I don't know, 88.9 megahertz, is reserved for KUSP, a nonprofit in Santa Cruz. But a lot of the frequency span is what's called unregulated, which basically means as long as you're nice about it, which means you can be interfered with and you can interfere other people, blah, blah, you can set up stuff, new technology in that brand without registering each transmission point.
Right.
And that's why you see a lot of sources using the same type of brands.
This is a home wireless network.
Right.
Right. Linksy?
Exactly. Yeah. Your home wireless network, all the companies that make those, they can't make like new technology that interferes with registered frequencies like KUSP. So they have to regulate themselves and put themselves in these narrow bands, and lots of people use those sources. So these wireless phone companies have been using those sources before wireless.
But you don't have to live with this.
You have to buy.
You can go into your router.
Oh.
And you can change the channel.
I don't think that would do it, but it might. It
worked for me.
Yeah.
You mean
okay.
that little plastic Inksy box?
Yeah. You actually there's a web interface to that box, so you can open up a web browser and point to it, and then you can change some settings. And what he's saying is, instead of channel,
actually first maybe you should figure out how to change the channel on your phone. A lot of wireless phones.
Oh yeah.
You can change the channel on.
Give it a shot.
Try that first.
I'll try that.
And if that doesn't work, go to your router and try changing the channel on the router.
But be careful when you're playing with the router, because you can mess up your network. And if you've got a geek around to help you, that's the best thing.
I have no geek.
But you know, read the manual. It's not that hard. The connecting to it's the hardest part, is finding what the IP address is. And that would take a geek about a minute and a half to do. But
and of course, realize when you're running your microwave that you're
same
not going to get any.
And microwaves just splatter stuff.
Yeah, they don't
play
nice.
All the spectrum. So the last choice for you is when you buy a new phone because it's driving you nuts. You buy a 900 megahertz phone. And
No. That's terrible.
Those are terrible because
you
of
won't
distance.
Get any. Yeah, get a 5 gigahertz phone.
Five gigahertz phone.
Yeah.
Okay, I can get a new phone. This one's kind of old.
That works. I'll take your old phone. Thank you so much, Belinda, for the call.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, this is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. We're taking calls with questions and comments at technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Hey, Sean, in 6 years, how many times do you think I've said those phone numbers? That's crazy. I say them 6 times a show. There's...
What,
50
you,
shows
did you just
a year.
Say something?
You don't
I think
even
I
listen.
Just
you
tune it
ignore
out.
Me, man. We're taking calls and questions. That's Sean Cleveland in the air with me. I'm Lyle Troxell. Over the phone, we have Miles Elam. And we have you if you'd like to call us with questions and comments at technology. And I'll say those numbers again and again, so just stick with us. Right now, Salinas Warren, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello?
Hello, Warren. What can we answer you? What can we help you with?
Yeah, I'm looking to get a new laptop. I have a Sony Vaio right now. It's a 2.4.
Why do you want a new computer?
Well, this one's old. It's had things spilled on it, and
it's a bad combination.
Has problems. I mean, I get errors when it boots
up. So what's your question? What kind of laptop you should get?
Well, I'm interested in an Alienware.
Oh yeah,
oh, those are nice.
Those are nice. You got some money to spend. Those are nice.
Yeah, and that's what I want to know is like. I mean, I'm not a gamer, but I want a nice laptop. I want dedicated video. I mean, I want something that's going to perform.
You want a nice machine.
And I'm looking at one that's a Core 2 Duo, you know, and I'm willing to spend, you know, $1,500.
Well, Alienware will certainly have Core 2 Duo notebooks. The only problem is...
But not right now. They're in about a month?
No.
Soon.
No, they have them on sale now.
Oh, yeah. When Intel makes an announcement... They're available.
Are selling.
Yeah, they make sure that there's availability.
So the thing is, the one problem I would say with that laptop is that it is big and power intensive, which means it doesn't last very long.
Alienware, they focus at the gamer, so you'll be buying a gaming notebook.
You'll be buying a machine that you might not use all its features with. But then again, you will not be disappointed with the machine. It'll be very nice.
It'll be fast.
I use it mostly at home, and the one I'm looking at is Area 51. I think it's like 55...
Okay, well, we could get into model numbers and everything, but let me ask you this.
No, that's probably the price.
Oh.
Well,
no way.
It starts at like $1,000.
Oh, that's not bad.
Okay. Right now.
Oh, they're sexy notebooks for sure.
Okay, but wait a second.
I want to get it with a gig of memory.
What about buying a desktop computer, which is going to be half the cost of the same machine?
I don't want a desktop. I've been using my laptop for a long time, and I don't want to go back to a desktop.
If you've got the money,
fine.
Do it.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to watch high-resolution video, you don't want to be, you know...
I'd say do it. I'd say get...
If you really want nice performance, they will ensure that you get it.
Alienware, I think that
I agree. Do not get integrated graphics.
Yeah, no, they were bought by Dell recently, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But it hasn't damaged them yet.
Yeah,
you know what?
I mean, I'm willing to spend a little bit of money. I mean, I bought a Sony. I paid a lot of money for this Sony.
Yeah, Sony Vaio is a good machine.
And Alienware is actually cheaper than the equivalent Sony.
Sure. I would say you're not gonna have a problem with Alienware hardware. I think the geeks could probably say that we endorse stuff, we go, that's a good machine.
Link.
Because I do like video conversions, like converting from one format to the other, and... the Sony has had some problems with that.
I'd say go for it, Warren. And Sean, got one more thing for you. Thanks
for
the call.
Yeah, send a link to Geeks at geekspeak.org. And I can tell you, if you have any questions about, the components, let me know, and I can tell you what I think.
Okay, we're going to go to Seaside. Bruce, welcome to Geekspeak.
Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. What's the question?
Oh, the question, first of all, a compliment on the way you hand out answers and how well they're received and tuned to the audience. About 10 minutes ago, somebody was calling about a sleep problem, and you said, oh, well, the reason your Macintosh crashed is because technology is complicated. And that was a perfectly acceptable answer for the guy.
Completely
and I thought
useless,
that's wonderful.
But, okay, good. That could be my answer to every question. So what's your question?
My question, ratings for systems. We're looking at buying a couple new motherboards. Well, maybe we can get a new system. Well, one of the things I'm interested in is reliability. Is there any website that gives reliability of systems or motherboards or any way to get, say, reliability ratings on just RAM chips?
Gosh, that'd be nice. Let's start a company, Sean.
This stuff is refreshed so often, it's tough.
You can't
to
test
get
all of it.
Long term.
And then, the learning how the reviewers actually get product and stuff, and that they get like kind of one-on-one tech support from a PR person, it's kind of like their review is not a reality of what you will actually get. And that's really frustrating. I don't know how you could say,
I work
reliable
with
or not
really
reliable.
Close with a bunch of reviewers, and they review the enthusiast level stuff, but anandtech.com, anandtech.com, anandtech, those guys are really good about not putting out a review until they feel really good with the hardware. It's been tested thoroughly. They've given it, they put it up head to head with competing hardware, so they can see which one's better. They're really good at that sort of thing. Another tech site is hardocp.com, really high end enthusiast. But Kyle Bennett, who runs hardocp, is really into not so much benchmarks, but the experience of the hardware,
okay, but
especially
the thing
for gaming.
The thing is,
so if
there
you go
is
to these,
not
these review sites, they push hardware pretty hard.
Okay, but these review sites are interested in selling their reviews and making advertising and have people read their content and stuff. We're not talking about like Consumer Reports. We're not talking about that kind of thing. It doesn't exist in the computer industry. It's too volatile to actually have that kind of thing.
I'm trying to give you the next best thing.
I agree. I think Sean's answer is the next best thing. You go to a good company that has that reviews a lot of product and has a good understanding of it. But it is not like standardized reports you can get on cars. What's the crash reports for a Ford Taurus? That kind of thing, which is how you normally make a large investment of like $2,000 for your home. You have that kind of research. That's the best way to be a consumer. But it doesn't exist. You basically have to see a couple of reviews, talk to a person, play with it at a store, and bite the bullet.
Yeah, and if you like reliability, don't buy the latest cutting edge hardware.
That's right. And if you like reliability, then get a really good service agreement with the company and see if you can get a service agreement where they'll send you a computer before you send yours back in.
But that's the problem, when IBM released the Death Star, it's a great hard drive. Everybody loved it. It was fast, but it took about a year before people realized that the glass platters are bad. They fail. And there were lawsuits
and it was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. And it just takes time. And by the time you figure this stuff out, your hardware's old and no one's selling it anymore. It's very difficult.
Yeah. So I think a little
you're
bit of
right.
Faith.
It is tough.
It is.
Yeah, and I'm looking for applications is going to be database serving. And databases are demanding.
You want reliability. The way that the high-end server companies do it is they've got lots of machines. You get lots of machines, you get two different locations, and you use technology to bridge that so that when that one computer fails, it only slows you down slightly. It doesn't actually take you down. But for the home use, that doesn't exist. And the part that I see the most stress about this is in hard drives, in that you've got normally a home computer has one hard drive, and that failure point, not only does your computer go down and it's not reliable until you get another hard drive and replace it and have someone do it for you or maybe do it yourself, additionally, all the data you have on your computer is gone. So you have this fail point of a hard drive, which technology has solved it in the server space by saying you get a RAID. And you get multiple hard drives,
one fails.
You accept one failing.
Yeah.
But we don't have that in the consumer space at the level that it's saturated. So now you get people taking photographs of their wedding, of their kids' first steps. They put it on their computer. They think it's great, and drive goes away. So back up your data, people. Please back up your data. Okay, anyway, that was a little bit of a rant, and thank you so much for the call.
Excellent answer also.
Well, and these manufacturers these days test their hardware pretty thoroughly, too. So when you're buying, especially from an Alienware or Falcon Northwest, these specialized shops, I know that they do a lot of testing.
I like those shops too. And that's the only thing I'm concerned about is Alienware has been bought up by Dell and it's going to become less specialized.
You know what? Dell had this battery recall and they're having all these notebook issues. This is probably the best time to buy a notebook from Dell.
That's probably true.
Because they're going to make sure that it's good.
Okay, from Paso Robles, Ed, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you, gentlemen. These new flash drives, the U3s.
Yeah.
Can you copy everything on the computer, including the operating system, or just programs?
Only if you have enough space. It's just like a storage device. It's an external storage device. It really has to do with how much space there is in it.
Can I copy my whole entire XP operating system onto it?
I wouldn't. It would be a waste of data to some
degree. Onto a flash drive?
How big is the flash drive?
1 gig.
No.
This is a USB flash drive?
Yeah.
I think an install
of... It's a great way to make a duplicate of your data. I wouldn't trust data on it. As a backup.
I think it's a good source of backup.
But I wouldn't copy it.
In case it's corrupted by a virus or something like that.
Don't back up your entire computer. What you want to do is you want to back up My Documents, which is a folder in your computer that has most of your
settings. Wherever your data is kept, that's the stuff you want to
So put that
back
onto
up.
It.
But backing up Windows, you need an application that can restore the backup properly.
Because that's the thing, is copying your entire hard drive to a flash, that won't allow you
and
to
it
reboot
wouldn't,
again.
It wouldn't fit.
So you just make sure you keep your operating system install disks, you keep all the software that you've bought, the disks for that. If you get downloaded things that you've purchased, make sure to keep the information about how you download it again, and then absolutely make sure that the data that you create, photos, images, email, whatever, on your computer, that stuff is backed up to your external source. Thank you for the call. I think we're going to take one more call on GeekSpeak today. That was Ed from Paso Robles. Robin from San Miguel, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I am interested in making archive-quality voice recordings, oral history-type things, and I was wondering if you could give me a recommendation for a device, either digital or analog?
I personally use the Marantz. PD, oh, I can't remember what it is. It's a portable recorded device. It has XLR in. I used to record the show on it before we automated the process. These things are great. They use a flash drive, so they're pretty durable. The only problem is the input is kind of sensitive to mic levels, to levels. But it's called a Marantz. If you go to Marantz, it's a Z at the end. I think the product's really good. It's a little expensive. It's like $500-$600 for one of these devices. But if we're talking about the oral history of a human being, what's $500, But it's an investment. And then you also have to have a flash card. And it's a digital recording. You can record it as an MP3 or as a wave. The wave, of course, is going to be better fidelity. But with voice, I don't think it's going to matter that much because the dynamicness of a voice is not high. So I would go ahead and go with a digital recorder. I'd go ahead and save your space and just start recording on MP3. But I know a lot of audiophiles are going to just trash me on that because it's, of course, a lossy format, which means you lose data every time you save in that format. Does that help you to some degree?
Yes.
Marantz. Okay. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you all for listening to Geek Speak. The Geeks this morning, Sean Cleveland here in the studios, and Miles Elam saving us from down south. Thank you, Miles, for being on the phone with us.
Glad to be here.
And Alex Lias, happy birthday to you, sir, and thanks for joining us on AIM and making sure we're tight on our P's and Q's. Geek Speakers is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one appointment crowns and veneers for appointments and more information, 423-2447. I mentioned the Geeks. I also want to mention Rick Philman. He's here tirelessly every week helping us answer phones, making sure that we're just not here geeking out because, who really wants to listen to that? And yeah, we're here for you and, of course, for your calls. Thank you so much for calling in and listening to Geek Speak. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Geek Speak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Sean, let me hand that sheet to me, would you please? This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Ardo, on the web at kusp.org. For KUSP and for Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Coming up next is Castle Cottage with Susan Freeman, the show that I first listened to on KUSP as a child. But first, of course, the Slo County Report. For KUSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell.